Okay, welcome to, I believe we're on the 8th edition of the North ACN Sports Report, a weekly podcast we do every Thursday here. And we have, you will not be hearing Joe Harrington's voice in entirety today, might be calling in a little bit later. I have a guest co-host with me today, Chris Dukes, who's getting text messages as we go. Chris, many of you remember Chris has been our guest before, and how does it feel to step up into the co-host chair?
I'm honored to be here for the co-host chair. I wonder if that means I don't have to brave through the quiz that usually comes at the beginning, or whether or not I'm going to have to do that today or not.
I don't think it's not going to be a quiz. I've kind of come along the lines. I just came over from a baseball game. I was covering a Rouse Leander baseball game, and game I saw, and I'm sure something that you think about with being all the baseball games. Pitch is hit, foul ball. I just saw a red Jeep take a baseball in the window, smashed. A bunch of high school kids were taking pictures of it. I don't know whose Jeep it was. So, Chris, just on that note, when you go to a baseball game, how do you determine where you're going to park?
You know, it's actually funny you brought this up, because last night I was covering a baseball game, and I was trying to shoot pictures from the outfield, so I pulled my car up against the back fence and thought to myself, I prayed to myself that there weren't going to be any home runs in that game, because I was right over the fence, right where one would have landed. But normally you try to park along the street if possible. You don't park in that little parking lot, because that's just bait for foul balls.
Well, let's put it, there's a reason there's so many prime parking spots available when you when you arrive to a game and there's still 5 minutes before opening pitch, and there's still the six spots closest to the front gate are still open. There's a reason those are there.
Yeah, and I mean, most of the people that are there are parents who have braved through 9 months of club or select baseball, and they know they probably had to drive home with a broken windshield to teach them that lesson.
Yeah, and there are some fields, obviously, that are worse than others. I think, I know, Cedar Park, there's no way. If you're getting hit with a baseball at Cedar Park, you're either parked illegally or a kid has fouled the ball back over the softball field, but at Leander, I don't know if you've been over, covered a baseball game there, foul the ball off short fence, both short fence to the field and short fence to the parking lot. So there's a kind of want to avoid the target anywhere near the field when you're there.
Plus, the baseball and softball fields are right next to each other, so really anywhere over in that area, there's a possibility of getting hit by a foul ball.
Yeah, well, so I guess we'll start off with a little bit of baseball. As I said, I'm coming over from a baseball game, and we're recording this on Wednesday, and it's spring break, but the baseball teams and softball teams are still in full swing. Soccer is taking the week off, and I don't believe there's any track meets either during this time period.
They're actually, the Texas Southern relays are this week.
Okay.
Which is, I mean, there's only a select few that get invited to that. It's one of those invite-only meets goes on down at the Texas Southern University.
So I'm guessing you know that because of a certain sprinter?
Yeah, you may have heard of him. His name is getting around the area. Antoine Davis will be there, and he'll be competing in the 100 and the 4x100 meter relay.
I remember seeing my favorite Antoine Davis story is with the ran in your paper. I remember talking to your stringer when this happened, when he was running at the Viper relays in Vandegrift, and there was a gun malfunction, and he didn't run, and so he had to run it again, and he still blew out the field.
Yeah, yeah, and I talked to him a day later, and he was very disappointed with his time. He ran, I think, like a 10.93, and was upset, beat the next guy by a good half second, and was still not happy about it when he got back.
I think it's interesting when in our business we cover a lot of sports, and there's a lot of you look at a baseball and softball game. Someone can try and say, I could do that, or oh, I could go hit that pitch. Well, I think track's the one line where people can't say that, because not many people are going to say, oh, I could run 10.93.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think it's pretty evident, especially when you watch it. Track is such an interesting sport, especially the sprints to me. I mean, you train for 6 months for 11 seconds. I mean, it's unlike any other sport, I think.
Yeah, and it's a sport that's really number-defined. And speaking of that, something we wanted to talk about this week, a sport that's not UIL-sanctioned, but both in the Leander School District and, I believe, over at Bastrop, correct, have some representatives going to the state tournament for powerlifting. And for those who aren't familiar, powerlifting, it is weightlifting, but it's more of it's a competition-driven weightlifting. I guess you want to Over in the Leander School District, Rouse's Siggy Martinez is going to go to the state meet for boys, and I believe you have two competitors going to state?
Yeah, two girls, actually. Kelsey Morrow, who's a junior, she'll be competing, and Daisy Padilla will also be competing at the state powerlifting meet.
Have you ever, when you went and talked to them, did you get to see the meet at all? I've never actually watched a powerlifting meet. I've had it explained to me. I've never watched one.
Well, actually, I didn't cover any meets personally this year, but that's one of the sports I actually, you can't say played, but participated in my high school days. It's definitely not the glamour sport. It's they're usually held in dirty gyms. You know, there's people around, but I mean, you really can't see the action, because there's so many things going on all at once. The only people there are literally parents who got drugged there in most cases, and you know, the coaches and the performers, and the clothes they make you wear. You wear a squat suit, which is usually two sizes too small, without any give in it at all. So you go home with red rings around your thighs, and it's a very it's not there's no glory in powerlifting, but it's a great accomplishment. I mean, and you really have to be dedicated to what you do to make it in that sport.
Yeah, and for people who don't really know, it's to put it in simple terms, it's a bench, right? A squat, and a deadlift.
Yes.
And if I remember correctly, there's judges that basically you have to get like two of the judges okay. Or...
Yeah, there's three judges, and each one has a light. Mm-hmm. And one stands directly in front of you or behind you, depending on what the lift is. Mm-hmm. And the other two stand on the sides, and they look for little things like, and deadlift, it would be a hitch, which, you know, means you stop and start again whenever you're in the middle of a lift. In bench press, obviously, you have to go down, touch your chest, and hold it there for a nanosecond before you can push it back up. In squat, if you take a step forward or take a step back, I mean, there's a lot of technique. It's a very technique-driven sport. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's powerlifting.
Yeah, it was interesting for on Rouse's side, we had E. Martinez over at Rouse. He won. He was the regional champion. He's going to go to state, and for his combined three lifts was 1,275 pounds for his three lifts, and he's in the 165 pound weight class. And it's interesting. I was looking through the site. You get a lot of, maybe we'll touch on this in a little bit, but you get a lot of those unsanctioned UIL sports that aren't organized, but then I go to the Texas High School Powerlifting Association website, and I can find kids from different weight classes, how much they lifted, their personal best. The kids, I could tell you how, I could go to this website now, and I could tell you how Ken El Paso did at a random meet. That was pretty impressive to me. You have an unsanctioned UIL sport that is really well organized.
Well, and it's organized by high school coaches, because it was originally, it was brought in to give kids something to do, particularly football kids, you know, during the dead season, between January and March, when they're between football and track. And, you know, it keeps kids in the gym, keeps them out of trouble. And, I mean, I think that's part of why it's so organized, is the people that are behind it are all high school coaches.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's interesting looking at the kids who compete, too. I was going to ask you, because you obviously have some girls that are going forward in this event. Do they compete in other sports too? Or?
Yeah, Daisy Padilla is a softball player, and Kelsey Morrow is a track athlete as well. I mean, it definitely, I talked to both of them about it. I mean, it's a big help for other sports. Mm-hmm. I mean, and coaches love it, because the kids are in the gym 5 days a week.
I remember I was talking to, when I was over at Rouse, just the emphasis on it. They had, I think, six kids compete. Only the one obviously went to state. But they liked the ability that kind of given that extra drive. I think it gives some of those kids who, and I'm not saying a kid who wouldn't want to be working out in the off season, but a football player who wants that little extra drive, who thrives under that competition, where if you were competing in powerlifting, maybe pushing from a 450-pound lift to a 500-pound lift, maybe that's a goal if you're powerlifting. But if you're just working out for football, well, you don't have that motivation there or that bar to try and reach.
Right, and sometimes you'll catch them, I mean, just kind of going through the motions. You know, they're in the gym, they're working out, but, you know, they're just waiting to put the pads back on, you know, in spring football.
Which, of course, is amazingly right around the corner. And if we're not going to get into spring football right now, this is my, This is my 15-second thing, my 15-second stance on that.
Yeah, it's not open Pandora's box quite yet on spring football.
Not yet. Wait, get back us in late April or early May, and we'll talk about it then. And as I mentioned, we talked about powerlifting, really well-organized, non-UIL-sanctioned sport. And there's also a couple other non-UIL sports you see teams play. I know we have lacrosse, we have bowling, I believe a sport you may be familiar with just because you used to work in the Marble Falls area. I've got kids going to the Bass Fishing State Championship up in Marble Falls at Lake LBJ, I believe.
Lake LBJ, yes. I covered a bass fishing tournament last year. It's not nonstop action for sure. It's a nice day in the sun though. It's pretty enjoyable. It's one of those sports I think that is very volunteer based. I mean, there's a lot of dads driving kids' boats around, and I mean it's bass fishing. It's big in Marble Falls.
I'm interested. It's something I'm probably been interested in looking into just with how these sports are going from a sport that you go from a baseball or a softball. You've got the systems there. Coach is built there. It's in track, obviously. It's all run through the school. It's really interesting to see to me how these teams actually, these non-UIL sanctioned teams actually stick together and run, because obviously, for one, there's the money issue.
Yeah.
It's not... Mom and dad are putting out a lot more money for a kid to play lacrosse than for baseball. And there's the money issue, and then just the organization issue of keeping things together. Because I think you may be able to put together a high school bass fishing team. You might be able to put together a high school bass fishing team, but you then have to go, okay, well, we then have to schedule it. We then have to find other teams to compete with. I now that I'm saying this out loud, I realize bass fishing is probably not the best example. Yeah. but I think you get my drift, where it really is a lot on the parents for these sports that don't have the, even though they're using the high school name, don't have the high school backing, for lack of a better word.
Yeah, and I mean, I know that some high school sports budgets aren't spectacular, but I mean, you know, look at a sport like swimming. At least they're getting some assistance. Mm-hmm. You know, and they're getting the networking that they get with the other coaches as far as finding meets and being able to travel to these things. Whereas you're talking about lacrosse, I mean, you've got to organize a way to get 25 kids from here to who knows where to play another team. I mean, it's much more widespread because there aren't as many participating in it. And I mean, it's a lot of logistics that you don't get to think about.
Do they have lacrosse out in Bastrop?
They do not have lacrosse in
Bastrop. what other non-UIL, do you have any non-UIL sports do you have kids competing in?
We really don't have any others. We barely have all the UIL sports covered out there. It's not quite as a diverse a population, I guess. We don't have a lacrosse team. Bowling, I'd have to look into it, honestly. You'd think I'd know about the big sport of bowling in Bastrop, but not that I know of.
Yeah, they have, out here, they have four of the five Leander School District teams have lacrosse. Rouse, Cedar Park, Vista Ridge, and Vandegrift, too. Leander does not. You have, I believe, all five schools have bowling teams. I don't know. I believe they do. I'm sure that someone out there will correct me if I'm wrong. But bowling is a sport where I know this because I got the email from parent contributed. The Leander girls won the district, their bowling district, and I apologize, I don't know what the name of that district is, and I don't know the
name
of
the teams that populate it.
Yes, I would assume just based on geography that the other teams in that district would have to include Cedar Park, Vista Ridge, Vandegrift, and Leander. Well, of course, Leander's team that won, and probably would make sense if there's a Georgetown in that area, just because that's a team that might have all those sports.
Right, and I mean, but if you look into a sport like bowling, it could be a Colleen or a Temple thrown into that league, thrown into that district as well.
Yeah, and you have, I mean, and of course, these non-UIL sanctioned sports, I mean, it's not like the UIL sticks to geography like it should sometimes. When I'm covering a District 17 4A swim meet where it's five Leander School District teams and Burnett, and the meet's in Burnett.
I've been to the Burnett Swim Center many times. I'm familiar with that area. Good barbecue over in Burnett.
That is true. Good barbecue in Burnett. Well, We've kind of divulged a little bit going down those paths of the non-UIL sports. Let's just do a quick update on some of the UIL sanctioned sports that aren't playing this week. Talk a little bit about soccer. I know your teams are in a District 17-4A.
49-4A.
49-4A. They would be in 17-4A for
right.
a more traditional sport. 49-4A, which means they might play my teams down the road.
Yeah, I think you're a 51-4A.
Yeah, 51-4A. So second or third round there, possibly.
I think that looks like it could be. I haven't looked at the playoff
yeah.
bracket yet, but just by where they are in order, I know that they're both in Region 4.
Yeah.
Meet in the second or third round, I believe, in playoffs.
So 17-4A, the soccer, who's leading those races? What are the teams there?
The Bastrop girls wrapped up their district on Friday night with a tie against Hayes 0-0. And they're 8-0-2 in district. This is their third year to win it in a row. They've been knocked out in the second round both years by Lake Travis. So
mm-hmm.
not having to deal with that, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
People up here are familiar with.
Yeah. Yes.
So they're looking for a lengthy playoff run. They've got a big crop of seniors, five girls that have been 3-year varsity lettermen,
mm-hmm.
Really looking to make some noise in the playoffs this year.
Mm-hmm.
On the boys' side, the only team that looks like it may get in is Cedar Creek. They're hovering between third and fourth right now. Need a little help to get up to number three. Don't want to see that first round team. It'll be Georgetown coming out of 54A. Trying to avoid that in the first round. Had a little bit of a disappointing year this year. They were looking at winning the district championship, brought back everybody from last year's team, and finished second in district.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you could say underachieved a little bit, but still a dangerous team, a dangerous out in the playoffs. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, and out in 51-4A, we have that district, just for recollection's sake, it's the five Leander School District teams in Marble Falls. And you have, right now, no one has clinched the first place yet. Cedar Park is in first for both boys and girls. Both of them should clinch with... Every team has one game left. They've all played 9 games so far in district play. There's one game left. Both of them should clinch with either a tie or a win in their next game. And no disrespect to who they're playing, but it's one of those games where you're going to pencil it in as a win.
Right.
So you're looking at Cedar Park... Boys and girls winning that district. On the boys' side, a little farther down, you have Cedar Park's going to win the district. Vandegrift's probably going to be second. And those teams played to a 0-0 tie last week, which I'm sure someone out there is saying, thrilling soccer. But but actually was a pretty good game for a 0-0 tie. After that, you have Rouse, which is making their first playoff appearance ever. You can read about that in this week's Cedar Park Leander Statesman.
Nice
one. And they took third place, actually. They beat Vista Ridge 3-0 on Friday to clinch the third place spot. Vista Ridge will be the fourth seed out of that district. So you got a team up and coming there. Leander and Marble Falls both missed the playoffs. And same thing on the girls' side. Leander and Marble Falls are out, where it's a little bit more of a... you'll have Cedar Park first, I believe it'll be Vista Ridge second, Vandegrift, and then Rouse. So same four soccer schools, and as we were talking about it before we walked in and started recording, it's kind of a benefactor of them playing in those clubs or select or whatever you want to call it all year round.
Yeah, and I mean, especially in the LISD area, anything along the 620 corridor, a lot of really good club soccer gets played out here, a lot of teams that go play in national tournaments, and it's a different beast when it comes to high school sports, and a coach's job is trying to get all those kids to mesh that, you know, don't play together, but, you know, 3 months out of the year. But
you go and you take a look. When I National Signing Day, I go over to Cedar Park High School, and of course there's four or five kids going for Cedar Park's football team. But the girls' soccer team, when you have five seniors going to play Division II or higher, that says a lot about the type of kids you have in your program.
Yeah, and it says a lot about what soccer means to this area. It's a lot bigger deal than I think a lot of people realize in the Leander School District.
Yeah, and it's something I think we'll start to see a bit more of that as the playoffs start to develop. And not saying anyone overlooks district play, and a coach would never ever agree with me if I said that, but you kind of have your haves and your have-nots already, and those haves they're sort of playing district play just to get ready for the playoffs. So you'll start to see that as you start with the playoffs. I think you'll start to see a little bit more of the excitement in the area, because right now, whether Vista Ridge finishes second or third in their district, I don't think is the concern. The concern is about, well, when we play that other District 51 4A team, I believe, in the fourth round.
Yeah.
Who's winning that game?
Right. And, I mean, how has the intra-school district rivalries, I mean, do you see that they exist? I mean, being out there on the sidelines?
Yeah, they do. And it's interesting to see the reinjection of Leander into it, because obviously last year Leander was up in the 5A district, and they're now back down in the 25-4A with the other Leander school district schools. And it's really interesting to see how the players and coaches really approach the games. I know last week, for instance, Cedar Park and Leander played in the first round of their District 25-4A series last week, and Leander won, and I was actually talking to the kid's dad who pitched that game, and he was telling me how, for one, he was pitching against one of the best pitchers in the area, Ryan Johnson, but for two, pitching against Cedar Park, I was talking to the kid's dad, and he was saying how he was really up to throw that game. It was a remember who's his son had taught him. He was telling me how his son had talked about it the night before, like how they really got up to play to beat Cedar Park. And I don't know how factual this statement is, but you go back to according to one parent, I don't know if this is actually true or not. When Clint Harper left to go to Marshall, where we have a coaching search still at Leander, and hopefully we'll know something more about that next week. Apparently his last words to his team after he told him he was leaving was, go and beat Cedar Park. So you have those rivalries where...
One for the Gimper kind of feature.
Yeah. And those rivalries, I think, really extend into the other sports. And there's some sports where obviously it's bigger than others. And some sports where I think rivalry can take a further point. For instance, in soccer, Cedar Park and Vandegrift, not a traditional rivalry, but in soccer, they both compete for district titles, real physical game. Where in baseball, you're seeing rivalry, you'll see kids fired up, but you don't have that physical element that can
right.
allow it to take it to that next level like you would have in a basketball or
right.
or a soccer.
A lot of dugouts jarring back and forth and,
mm-hmm.
and stuff like that. I remember you talk about the Cedar Park and Leander baseball rivalry. A few years ago, Nathan Thornhill was pitching
mm-hmm.
at Cedar Park, and
yes.
I mean, who's at UT, of course, now.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the last game of the year, and Leander had lost to Cedar Park earlier in the year to Thornhill, and they beat him, and you would have thought they'd won the World Series. I mean,
mm-hmm.
those kids were going crazy. I mean, and part of that goes back to what we were talking about before with the select sports.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a lot of those kids grew up playing Little League together, play together in the summer on the
mm-hmm.
same teams, and I mean, It's definitely kind of that, you almost say sibling rivalry whenever
yeah.
it comes to those sports here.
It's the same thing where you have, just in, for instance, in football, I think back to, I know you have kids particularly, and you have this, I guarantee you have this at Bastrop, if not yet, once Cedar Creek starts to move on a little bit more, you'll see more of this, but like the Leander-Rouse rivalry is growing because you've got kids who, up until they were in sixth grade, they were planning to go to high school together. And now...
Yeah, we've got a couple of cases of kids whose older siblings have gone to Bastrop,
mm-hmm.
and now they're at Cedar Creek, and I think that's pretty interesting. No sibling against sibling yet, but I'm hoping for one of those stories eventually.
Yeah, that's definitely interesting. We have we don't have a sibling against sibling story in the Leander School District, but it's always fun when Cedar Park and Rouse play baseball against each other, because Cedar Park's coach is Connie Cochran, and his son, Paul, is the... head coach over at Rouse. So that's always fun to see when you have a bit of that. I'm sure the whole Cochran family will be in attendance, and that's actually a doubleheader, so that'll be fun to see.
Yeah, the Cochran family, good people, good baseball people.
Well, good segue for baseball. We're actually about to try and get Joe Harrington on the line, normally our co-host on this show, sports editor of the Round Rock Leader, and Joe is wearing his Round Rock Express cap this week. He's out in Surprise, Arizona, so give us a minute. We're going to try and get him on the line. Hi, and we were able to get him through on the line, and now we've got with us from the phone from Surprise, Arizona, we've got Joe Harrington, our normal co-host on this show. Joe, how's Arizona treating you?
It's really nice, although I've spent most of the time in the hotel room writing stories, but no, it's been really nice out here.
And you're out there for Rangers spring training, and obviously we've got some listeners in the Round Rock area who are avid followers of the Express. How's the team looking?
It's really weird. I've tried to avoid looking at the whole team and just kind of focusing on the players, because I could care less about who's on the Texas Rangers. I just really care about who's going to be on the Round Rock Express. So, you know, keeping tabs on guys that think they're going to be in the AAA and some kind of the prospects is what I'm looking at. And I'll tell you what, there's a lot of there's a lot of young guys that are trying to get on the Rangers that they just probably, I would say 80% of the teams would probably have them on their opening day roster, but you know, the Rangers infield is really good, and the best prospects for the Rangers are really in the infield. So Jurickson and Profar, Mike Alt, I mean, those guys have looked really good since I've been here, which has only been just since Monday. But Mike Alt's been really impressive. He just smacked a home run yesterday, and it was a bomb.
And those are, and for you being out there just talking to those guys, is there kind of a how much is the full Round Rock staff out there? Is all the coaching staff and managers from Round Rock there too?
Yeah, and all the coaching staffs are out here because all the teams are out here. And I guess what I never really realized until I got out here is every single member of the organization that's playing baseball for the Rangers is out here in spring training. There's the minor league camp, and there's the pro camp, and so all the coaches are out here, and they're all right now. All the AAA staffs are with the major league camp. So Bobby Jones, Spike Owens, and the new coaches on the staff, Scott Coolball and Brad Holman, they're all helping the major league staff. Which is actually off today. And then the minor league staff, that's where you always see the spring training instructors that they hire.
Mm-hmm.
They're out there with the minor leaguers. And it's pretty fun just to see that. And I know some of the guys, one of the guys that was with the Round Rock Express last year, Joey Butler, was sent down to AAA yesterday, and so he'll be in the minor league camp now. He was in the pro camp yesterday.
And so, you mentioned how you have a lot of things that you didn't recognize that about spring training. What are some of the other cool things that people, someone who would want to make a spring training training camp trip, wouldn't realize or kind of surprise them when they go out to surprise?
Well, one thing I didn't really realize is these almost all of these locations, they're shared. So the Rangers share the location with the Kansas City Royals, which, you know, it's kind of weird because you're walking around the Rangers facility and they're all upbeat, they're excited because they've won a lot of games, and you go over to the Royals organization, they're all bitter and surly and asking you for your press pass all the time. It's like they haven't been in the playoffs for decades. But yeah, so I didn't know that. And we were over, you know, surprised that it's essentially a suburb of Phoenix, and all of these Cactus leagues seem to be no more than 45 minutes away from Phoenix. So we've been going over to Peoria, not Illinois, Phoenix. Mm-hmm. There's another organization that I think the Padres are over there. So we've gone over there because it seems like most of the group that's out here knows that area a little bit better. But, yeah, it's all pretty close-knit. We got to see the Giants play the Rangers AAA on Monday, and Boomgarner pitched incredible, and the Rangers lost, and then the Rangers just absolutely blitzed the Brewers. And yesterday, it was like 13-3 or 12-3 yesterday. So it's a pretty interesting mix. It's a very cool clubhouse. I mean, there's not a lot of, I could tell in the couple hours I was there yesterday, it's a pretty laid back clubhouse, and there's a lot of good veterans in there. But I didn't sense any prima donna type players in the clubhouse this year.
Well, I think we've got to touch on this since we talk about food so often in this podcast. How have you been eating out in Arizona?
You know, I mean, not bad. I mean, they have burgers and hot dogs and a press box. You know, we went out and we got some Mexican chow the other night, Italian food for lunch today. You know, I mean, it helps cover a Triple A team, Sean. Come on now.
Well, Joe, before we let you go, since Chris is technically co-hosting today and you're a guest, I'm going to give Chris a chance to be on the other side of the random question once. And so he can ask you a random question.
Spring this on me at the last second. Let me think about it. Since we were talking...
You just failed, Chris. You can't think about it. Come on.
I got it. All right. Since we're talking baseball today, and we were talking high school baseball right before this, what of all the things you hear parents yell, you know, the chants, which one do you think is the most redundant and unnecessary of all the things that parents yell at kids in the middle of games?
Oh, God, well, I mean, you always, I don't know, it's kind of like when Joey and Joseph be on there, it's like when they start yelling at the kids, like right when the game started, like, mm-hmm. You know, don't take your eye off the ball. The guy's like in like he's on deck. He's not even up there. And, I still like it when they pester the refs when it's clearly a even call game and there's not really a bad call made. They don't want to yell at their kid. They don't want to yell at the team. They don't want to yell at the coaches. So they just take it out on the refs. I think that happens quite a bit. You know, like, put some runs up on the board. I always hear that. Or, we need a big hit. You always hear parents say that. We need a big hit. Yeah? I always don't want to follow. You need about 5 big hits in a row. You know, like, you need a big hit. You're down by 12 runs. Come on now.
Yeah. I always think that...
I'm at a point where I kind of zone them out, though. You know, I mean, unless it's something funny, I just can't concentrate on it.
Yeah, I personally, I've always liked be a hitter. I think that's my favorite of the random things that get yelled at the kids in baseball games.
I like it when suddenly the parents that know these kids better than anyone else in the stadium suddenly become just like a baseball coach. And like, go on, kid. they suddenly forget their son's name and they just call him kid. Nine.
Well, have any over exuberant parents still following their kid around in spring training, Joe?
You know, I haven't ran into any of the parents. Kind of a cool thing, you know, running into quite often the Ryan family because they're obviously the owners here at the Express, so we've ran into them a few times, and you know, just nice people. The owners out here, but you can tell it kind of rubs off on throughout the whole organization. I mean, everybody I've met out here, and there's some new coaches, they've been super nice, and it's just kind of weird because obviously if you're following along the press clippings, you know, the Rangers and the Ryans are kind of at a little tussle right now, so it's been kind of weird being out here because they're so nice, they're so polite and they're so eager about Ranger baseball, but yet, you know, the patriarch of the family is kind of feeling the heat in the organization.
Yeah. Hey, well, Joe, we appreciate you calling in, and we'll be happy to have you back in Central Texas next week.
Yeah, we can get down to it. We can talk about some baseball. Hey, Chris, how did Connelly start their district?
Yesterday I was out and covered Bastrop versus Maynard, and I've covered Cedar Creek and Hutto, but I haven't seen anything with Conley yet this year. I know their softball team lost to Cedar Creek Friday nights.
Oh, wow. I thought their softball team would be pretty good. I guess it's the first one, but I think they're also still incorporating some of the basketball girls there, too.
Yeah, it takes a little while to get going and switch over from the hardwood to the diamond.
All right. Well, Joe, appreciate it. Hey, Joe, have a good rest of the time in Arizona, and we'll see you next week.
Hey, don't make this the lowest rated podcast, right? or anyone out there to carry the show, but you guys keep up the good work, okay?
All right, well, thanks to Joe for calling in, and obviously we'll have him back on the show next week when he's back in town from Central Texas. And I think that's a good segue. Let's try, about 10 minutes left in the show. Let's talk a little bit of high school baseball and get a little more in-depth in that, because it's something where I've watched a lot of high school baseball in the past 7 days, and I'm sure you have as well. So just throwing a curveball out there, what's been the best high school baseball game you've seen so far this year?
You know, I've actually spent more time in softball than I have baseball. Yesterday was my first high school baseball game of the year. Bastrop's been away, and Cedar Creek's been away. So yesterday was my first one of the year. Got to see Cameron Williams of Bastrop, who's going to pitch at LSU next year, mow down 15 batters, looking really, really impressive. I went down to right behind the backstop just to watch him pitch a couple of innings, and they were gunning him in the lower 90s a few times. I think he reached 92. I mean, he's a very impressive pitcher to watch. So I guess that would probably be the best game I've seen so far.
Well, for me, baseball, I guess we'll pose this question to softball once I've gone into baseball. I think there's two ways I look at it for best game. There's both individual performance and, like, if a kid strikes out 15 and allows one hit, but his team wins 12-0, that's not a great game, but that's a great performance. I think best game I've seen, and this one, and the one gets the edge because it was a district game. And there was a non-district game tournament game I saw that was pretty good, where Leander actually won during on a walk-off because of the two-hour time limit.
Wow.
So I saw one of those, but I'll give the edge to the first Vista Ridge Vandegrift game I was at last Tuesday. Good back and forth game where early on the teams are trading runs, and goes all the extra inning game goes to the ninth inning, and it's kind of weird. You think of something that'd be exciting as that big fly home run to win the game in extra innings, but the thing I actually, it's kind of the more excitement you see is when the kids kind of sneaks that fielder's choice for the game winning run in, or the sacrifice fly, and the kid charges home for third.
Right.
I just always like enjoy seeing that with the, because Vista Ridge being the home team won in the bottom of the ninth inning, just the excitement as the ball just scoots over the shortstop's glove. I just think that's really neat to see. Obviously, it's always fun to see the big home run, but I think that's those other run producing.
Yeah, and I mean, I still think the most exciting thing is if you know the game can end on a play at the plate.
Yes.
If the catcher can at least get to the ball. You know, it doesn't even have to really have that much of a threat of being tagged out. As long as the catcher is holding the ball and the runner crosses the plate, I'm a happy guy. I think those are the most exciting innings.
Yeah, I remember, like, I can't believe this still sticks in my head. I think it was when Pudge Rodriguez was with the Marlins. There was a playoff series that ended with a play at the plate, and I remember that. And I don't know which year it was. It was one of the years the Marlins won a World Series.
Yeah.
And I couldn't tell you anything else that happened about that series at all. But for some reason, it sticks in my mind of the play at the end of the series where collision at the plate and him showing the ball to the umpire and the series being over.
Right, right. And I think back to the Pirates-Braves series in the early 90s. I mean, I think that's what sparked a love affair of baseball for me. I remember rooting for the Pirates and not knowing why back then. And
still why.
Yeah.
Well, I've got to ask you then. We're technically not supposed to endorse anything, and Joe's normally our policer on that, but there's a certain video game commercial right now. I don't know if you've seen it or not, where Andrew McCutchen is sitting next to a guy, and the guy's congratulating him on winning the World Series, and Does that sting a little bit?
yeah. I mean, like I said, I have. It does for me though. The reason I root for the Pirates, I don't understand it. I don't know what people ask me all the time. Why would you root for the Pirates? And I don't know.
Well, I'm not any better. I'm a Mets fan, so I kind of get the at least. Well, the Mets though includes trips to the playoffs and first round collapses and holding division leads with 12 games left and somehow losing 11 of those.
See, for the Pirates, it's been a lot of years of just not having to worry about the playoffs because...
Well, that one, you can judge a book by its cover most of the time.
It's very true.
Yeah, and I think we didn't touch on it yet. We talked about baseball, the best baseball game we've seen this year. What about softball for you? What is one of the most exciting softball games you've seen so far this year?
Bastrop and Cedar Creek played a really exciting game just Monday afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
This week's kind of run together. I had to think back on
it. It's spring break, so it's kind of crazy.
Yeah, day baseball, night softball. You know, it's been a fun time. But 4 lead changes. Bastrop comes back, takes the lead in the top of the inning. Cedar Creek ends the game with a walk-off single, like we were talking about earlier. Just an exciting game. And, I mean, really one of the first times I've gotten to see that rivalry mature to a point where both teams are competitive,
mm-hmm.
which was a really exciting moment in both those schools' history, I think.
And mine was another walk-off extra inning game. I think this one was 8 innings. Rouse versus Vista Ridge, their first district game of the year. And this was actually one of those games where I didn't see most of it because there was a baseball game going on 20 feet away, a soccer game going on 50 feet away, and I was actually shuttling around in a golf cart with Rouse Athletic Coordinator Josh May. We were just watching multiple games, so I didn't see most of it. I think I was able to actually watch softball from like the 6th inning on, and it was one of those where you had it all. You had the walk-off hit at the end, but you had the point where team has second and third, 2 outs, girl lines one down the third base line that you're almost certain the game's over, and the girl makes the backhanded grab. It's one of those that had it all, had those plays where kind of like, oh, the game's over. No, it just keeps going.
Yeah. The Rouse Vista Ridge, right? I mean, that's probably one of the first really competitive softball games those two teams have played.
Yes, and as I was corrected, Rouse did make the playoffs once in their history, but it was at the 3A level.
Oh,
that
okay.
was during that first year.
Okay.
They've never made it at the 4A level. They made it at 3A. I don't know. Did Cedar Creek compete at 3A, or did they just go straight to 4A?
They went straight to 4A. Yeah. Last year, they were in 16-4A in every sport but football. This was their first year to play football.
Yeah. So Rouse has made the playoffs before, but never at the 4A level. And I just to close everything out, just a quick softball update. In District 25, 4A, we actually have probably a big game coming up today, since this comes out on Thursday, that I'll be at, is Leander versus Dripping Springs. Leander's actually undefeated right now.
Wow.
They're 4-0 going into a game with Dripping Springs, which is also undefeated. And
right.
I mean, as someone who's been familiar with Dripping Springs softball and Leander softball, I bet it's kind of surprising to hear that Leander is undefeated after 4 district games.
Right, and could make a huge, huge statement in that district if they could somehow go down. Is it in Dripping Springs? Or
it's in Leander.
Oh, it's in Leander. So. But still, I mean, you get them coming into your house. I mean, that's a big deal. That would be a huge win for Dripping Springs.
Yeah, and Leander's a program. It's a really interesting story, and we'll have something on in our paper next week. They've got a good sophomore pitcher named Hannah Holt. But their team in general, they have good numbers this year from a team that historically has struggled to put together a JV team. And just that program, it's just been moving to 4A probably helped. But either way, seeing what they've been able to do to beat a Marble Falls in extra innings, to go and win a big game against Rouse, where it's always a rivalry game, but to come out and win a big game like that. So really kind of cool to see what's going on with Leander on the softball diamond.
Yeah, and obviously that district has really tightened from,
mm-hmm.
I mean, for a long time, it was Dripping Springs and Vista Ridge and everybody else,
mm-hmm.
It was the haves and the have-nots. And to think that there's another team in that mix that it could possibly sit on top of that district is exciting.
Yeah, that's something we'll definitely be watching tomorrow. Thursday, so today. Well, everyone, it's been about 45 minutes, and once again, thanks to Joe for calling in. Chris, thanks for co-hosting. I hope it was lived up to all your expectations.
It certainly did. I was thinking all the way through South by Southwest traffic on the way up here that of the great time I was going to have on the podcast, and I certainly did.
So. Oh, and as everyone knows, that South by Southwest conference traffic gave Chris lots of time to think. So, everyone, thanks for listening, and we'll get back to you next week.